Today, we have the pleasure of receiving Nick Vigier, based out of New York City, who is a CISO with incredible experience. His career takes us to the history of information security management. This is Guy Morong, your host from the Cubic Lighthouse podcast. Hi, Nick. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Guy. Great to talk to you.
Nick Vigier is an experienced CISO. Today is his first appearance on this channel, which in time, as we're recording this on the 20th of December, and we launched actually the channel today. It is a great day for us, and it's a great pleasure to have Nick with us because Nick has a quite extensive experience, and also he has a strong views of a number of topics, and that's great. And those we really want to share with you. But today, the focus is not so directly on the cybersecurity topic, which we'll do in future videos, but more about Nick's career and the different steps in that career, and also the evolution of his analysis, understanding, and wisdom he gained over time. Thanks very much, Nick, for being with us. And from here on, I'll pass on the mic to you.
Sounds great. I guess we'll first congratulations on launching all those things and great success on the platform. So lots of good luck there. Yeah, I mean, so I've been in the security industry for a little over 20 years, but it's been a journey of exploration. No career goes in a straight line. And so, I started mine more on like the network engineering side of things for the New York Stock Exchange and the American Stock Exchange, and had a great fortune and misfortune of starting about 4 months before September 11th. And so obviously that was right next door to where the New York Stock Exchange and American Stock Exchange are. Mm-hmm. And so getting immediately thrown into probably one of the biggest crisis responses you can ever imagine, and especially from a network engineering perspective where all of the networking lines went through the World Trade Center and trying to rebuild everything from the ground up. So I started there. Networking has always been very interesting and foundational for me because you have to understand how everything works. It's not just about if the network is performing, it's understanding every application, everything that's going on, because everyone wants to blame the network. And your job mm-hmm. is then to defend yourself and prove that it's not the network, which I think comes in really handy when it comes to security and risk management and cybersecurity in general, because it's such a broad area. And being able to understand the complexities of that type of space came in really handy for me. In the context of the New York Stock Exchange and American Stock Exchange, it was very formulaic for networking. And so I had the fortune there of sitting next to the penetration testing team. I thought that what they were doing was really interesting. I started volunteering my time there, met one of my mentors there, Al Berg, who took me under his wing and taught me a lot about cybersecurity and how to approach it. And after a few years of volunteering my time, they finally brought me into the team. Around that time, Al actually left to go work at another company, but I did my penetration testing work at the New York Stock Exchange and came to realize that penetration testing is an art and I'm not an artist and I really hated it. And it gives me pause anytime someone comes to me and says, I want to be a red teamer or I want to be a pen tester. And it's inevitably viewed as the sexy thing to do in cybersecurity, but it's not that sexy. There's a lot of report writing. There's a lot of, knocking on all the doors and things like that. It takes a very specific mindset. So the first question I ask someone who says, I want to be a red teamer, I want to be a pen tester is why? Give me a real reason, because this is not, the end all be all of what you think it might be. So after about a year at the New York Stock Exchange doing penetration testing, Al actually brought me over to the company he was working at. It's called LiquidNet, which is a financial services firm. So still in financial services. I'd been at New York Stock Exchange for about 4 years at that point. So now stepping over to LiquidNet, where there's about 125 people. It was a global company. So still very small, but impactful. And we were a wholesale market for stock trading. So essentially, if you wanted to buy a million shares of IBM and someone else wanted to sell a million shares of IBM, how did we match them together? But what was really interesting is that Al took a very holistic approach to security. It wasn't just one thing. And that's where I really started to understand that, you know, we 2 weeks in, I went to go learn how to do bug sweeping, you know, detecting listening devices and things like that. We owned physical security. We did the risk management. We did security operations, engineering, you know, the AppSec side of things, all the governance things, and got a SAS 70 at the time when the SOC 2 was called a SAS 70. And so it was a really interesting time to explore and understand just how broad this is, and kind of fed into my overall, my educational background is a liberal arts degree in computer science, which really is about asking questions, right? You're not learning how to do every single thing. You're learning how everything works and how to think about things in a much broader context. And I saw that security was actually that analog for me, because we got to touch everything in the business. And it was a really interesting experience through that time. We went through the 2008 market crash. Liquidnet was supposed to go public right after Lehman Brothers went under. So that didn't happen. But it was a really great learning experience through a rapid growth, high energy time in finance. And I think it was really foundational to everything that I've done since, of realizing how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together.
I like that. I like your way to describe. I think the network side was still digital, but the latter parts, and then there was an artistic phase, and then, you know, more the realization that it is analog. A lot of parts of security is analog. It's a nice picture. It encompasses so many ideas. Great.
Yeah, there's a lot of what we would call wetware involved in cybersecurity. There's all the technical aspects, but the human side of it is so much more important, and it's what drives so much of everything. And I think, you know, at that point in my career, it was a lot about being a protector, right? We see a lot of things, we perceive a lot of things, especially in security being so broad and touching so many parts of an organization, that we want everyone to just do what we tell them to do. And that was a very emotional time for me, of trying to understand that everybody doesn't want to be protected, and that's okay. That's part of taking risk. And while I want everyone to be protected, it's not necessarily the path that we're going to take. So that was really interesting from a formative perspective. It was still, though, very much kind of a startup mentality. There was a lack of, you know, some structure organizationally. And so what I wanted to do is to go learn about budgeting in a very real way. And I wanted to work for a large company. So that's where, you know, Guy, you and I crossed paths at Sony. Mm-hmm. And so Sony was a really amazing experience working with the global security team. I was the CISO for Sony Corp of America and responsible for about 8 different operating companies and our Western Hemisphere data center. And it was a really great opportunity to meet some amazing people. At the time, Sony was recovering from the Sony PlayStation breach, been building out a global security program, and just a really great nexus of awesome security minds coming together at the same time in the same place. And there I really learned a lot about budgeting. Yeah. And actually learned a lot about international privacy, which was really unexpected. Not something that I really had to deal with in financial services, since we were very much more of a business-to-business platform. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in the year and a half that I was there, I learned a tremendous amount and met some amazing people, which was really, again, transformative for me to understand more of the business side from a security perspective and how we could actually influence things, and especially working in, you know, a very large company and how to influence change in that type of an environment. From there, I went to go work at a company called Palantir, which is a data analytics firm. This was in 2013. So, you know, big data was early on. AI wasn't really a thing yet. ML was definitely not a thing yet. And so I ran a team of security subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. There were about 8 of us, but these were former, you know, NCIS, FBI, NSA tailored access, a really interesting cross section of disciplines of security. And, you know, we did really amazing things and worked with some really, you know, the Fortune 50. So having been in the security industry at that point for about almost 10 years, was a matter of taking a step back and saying, how's everybody else doing it? So it was a little bit like consulting. And so seeing how the Fortune 50 were approaching security was very eye-opening. a little scary at the time, but it was eye-opening in terms of like, what does this look like in these organizations and how are people approaching this? And then also trying to think about the problem in a more advanced way around data and how do we actually tell a better story. From there, I was the first security hire and CISO at DigitalOcean, which is a cloud hosting platform and data, you know, infrastructure as a service, data centers all around the world. And there I owned everything from physical security, international privacy, law enforcement relations, and then what I consider to be kind of the main pillars of a standard security program for me, which is product security, the security of the things that you build, platform security, the security of where the things run, enterprise security, meaning the security of where the company does its work, so your productivity suites and things like that. I mix operations into the enterprise security side. And then GRC, so your governance, risk, and compliance. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I've structured teams, you know, from that point forward, was saying, how do I'm going to think about it in these pillars. And the reason I think about it in those pillars is from the budgeting perspective of how do these align to different teams and the different scaling factors for how these teams are either invested in, divested from, or how you add headcount or remove headcount is all linked to other parts of the business. They're not just one bucket. And I think that's one thing about security is that those outside of security tend not to understand the complexity of it. They see the one part where security interacts with their department, but they don't necessarily see all of the other interactions that are taking place, all the other elements that have to exist. And so we have to become storytellers about how much reach we have within an organization. Mm-hmm. And that would be my caveat to folks too, is if you're in the cybersecurity industry and you're only looking at one of those things, you have to broaden your aperture because there's a lot more going on.
I think, you mentioned it before. I mean, ultimately, as your responsibility grows or evolves, there is so many new topics which come into the mix. You know, of course, you could be on the offensive side, defensive side, etc. You go from digital to analog. But I think even, you know, you have to explain suddenly your budget goes bigger. You have to suddenly manage budgets and explain them and justify them and show that there's a return on investment, if I can say so. But also, I think there's sometimes which escapes people, at least in my way of thinking. You know, I also had, of course, a lot of things which is more productivity. How do I make my team more productive? Because I have a limited budget, the scope of things I have to do is getting bigger, so I have to become more productive in order to make both ends meet, which is a whole different topic. But also in my mind, you know, we always talk about controls and risk and this and that, but in some sense, you have an adversary somewhere, the invisible adversary on the other side. And you have to think that you are managing a battlefield. Yeah, there is a pressure from the bad guys and the different type of bad guys on different parts of your company. And you have to think, where are my defenses? Where are they okay? How quickly can I intervene? How quickly can I detect? Where have blind spots or whatever? I think it's, for me, it's like, I don't know how, for lack of a better word, it's you have to manage a battlefield. And nobody ever talks about that because they only talk about risks. They talk about controls. They talk about, incidents and so on. But in my mind, it was essentially a... You are like someone who has to manage on behalf of the company, to protect the company, that battlefield. And you have to see in your mind, where are the bad guys? Or where can they come in? Where do I see choices? Or where do I see pressure from the bad guy?
Bad guys are certainly a factor in all of this. I'll say that from my experience, what I've come to realize, I think this is where there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen. We've shifted the conversation a lot to resilience. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that we've been doing, historically speaking, have been measuring of trailing indicators, vulnerability management being a great example of that. Mm-hmm. Vulnerability management shouldn't even exist as a discipline. All vulnerability management is a byproduct of poor change rhythms. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a strong change rhythm, vulnerability management becomes a painful, arduous process. If your system's not resilient and able to manage change, it becomes an arduous process. So the question is, do you want to be in the habit of being a doctor treating cancer? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to be in the habit of being a coach that mm-hmm. builds performance and builds resilience so that you don't have to go and see the doctor very often? So I think those are the, adversaries appear in different forms. They can be attackers. They can be just the employee trying to be productive and having to work around a lot of complexity. They also become an attacker to a certain degree. But yeah, it's an interesting, a lot of the experiences that I've had have really been about like, how do you form a more balanced approach to security? You know, and I think my time at DigitalOcean was interesting. I was there for a couple of years. We got them into a really good state as it relates to the compliance and security. And at the time, there was nothing when I joined. So it was really about building everything from the ground up and running that holistic program and having the physical side of things, right? Because we had physical data centers, and we're building out a lot of new products and features, and how does security actually help accelerate development, you know, things of that nature, which is, I think, ahead of its time to a certain degree. The Netflix teams were obviously very much, you know, moving in that direction, but we were trying to figure out ways of, hey, how do we create some of those paved roads so that product teams don't have to go inventing things like encryption and authentication and, you know, authorization and things like that, because that's where they're going to fail. They're not experts at building those things. They want to build products and services.
Sure.
And it's around that time that I was trying to figure out, why don't CISOs and CIOs get along? And so I got a call from a recruiter who offered me, who said that Gemini, which is a cryptocurrency exchange, was looking for their first CIO. They were a 35-person company founded by the Winklevoss twins from Facebook fame. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting to go back. It was an opportunity to go back to my financial services roots. It was an opportunity to go back to my networking roots and to own infrastructure. And I was very specifically not going to own security, which I was like, great, I want to be a victim of security. I want to see what it's like on the other side. And so I joined a company that was, you know, Bitcoin was at $1,000, on its way up to 10,000, on its way up to 20,000. We were moving from AWS into a data center to do high frequency trading, or to facilitate high frequency trading. And it was really, you know, reinventing financial services and stock markets all over again, and accelerating that, you know, repeat of history. So that was a really interesting time, interesting place, you know, and building out some, you know, there's no undo button in crypto. So there, you can't recall a wire or reverse an ACH or whatever. It's gone. It's over. Like the second the transaction happens. So it's very high stakes. But I came to realize that CISOs and CIOs have different operating rhythms and different priorities. The CIO is literally laying track as fast as he or she can for the freight train of the business. And if they don't lay the track fast enough, the train runs them over and then runs out of track. You will notice immediately if a CIO is not doing their job. A CISO, on the other hand, is more like the back of the train, yelling up to the CIO saying, hey, could you patch that thing for me that you just like laid track for? And or that the train's on right now? And the CIO's response is, I'm laying track as fast as I can. I'll get to you when I have a second. And for me to realize that, even as someone who loves security, to say, I have to deprioritize security because of this other priority that I have, was really eye-opening. Which makes you think that, like, if you have a CIO that really doesn't care about security, how far down that priority list is security? Mm-hmm. Probably pretty far. Sure. And so, you know, for me, it became a that was one of the, I have a few core tenets, but one of them made me realize that if the CISO reports into someone else and they are not, and the CISO is not the representative of security to the board and to the executive team, but rather going, it's being passed over to someone else to present, then it will never be presented. Because I know that if the security team reported to me at Gemini and I was presenting to the board, I would spend 95% of the time talking about my stuff and maybe 5% of the time talking about security, which is not the right ratio and not something that we shouldn't be prioritizing one over the other. So from there, I went to go work at a company called Coalfire, which is a security advisory services company, a security services company. So, and one of the things they do is advisory. So I was an executive advisor. My job was to go work with the, you know, executive teams from our customers and help them work on security strategy and whatnot. And it was really, that was phenomenal to take a step back, bring all the things that I've learned over the course of the prior, you know, 15 years, and help them on, help share that knowledge with other CISOs and other, you know, CIOs, CTOs, CEOs about how security can actually help drive the business. Let's not just talk about security as a layer. Let's talk about how it actually helps accelerate things. And that was, I really enjoyed that a lot. From there, I was the CISO, the first CISO at ID.me, which is an identity verification platform, which that was, I thought crypto was crazy. This environment was crazy because it was going through the, it was fighting against the identity fraud that was happening during COVID, where the government in the United States was giving away money for unemployment. And someone filing for unemployment in the October of 2020 could get $25,000 in a bank account within 72 hours and a debit card just by saying they were unemployed. And so talk about monetizing identity fraud. You get $25,000 per stolen identity when we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars that were stolen by Nigerian fraudsters, North Korea, China. Like, I mean, it was rampant. And IDMe was standing in front of it saying, we're going to help prevent this. And so that was almost like doing incident response for an entire year. It was insane. We hired 1,000 people in 30 days and we were an 800 person company at the time.
Wow.
It was, like I said, I thought I saw chaos and fast pace when I was in crypto. It didn't hold a candle to what we were dealing with at ID.me. But it was a great platform, awesome experience. And then from there, I was a CISO most recently at Talend, which is a French data analytics company. And they were acquired by a company called Click, both Thoma Bravo portfolio companies. I'm now the CISO at Oscar Health, which is a health insurance company in the United States.
Well, that was a very simple pass. But I appreciate very much your you know, taking a step up from time to time and saying, what did I learn? And, you know, when you, depending what context you're looking in, what does security mean in that year for that business, and not projecting always a very simplistic, generic view about security. I think it's our way of thinking has changed over time, and also every business has a different risk equation or a different operational equation. And I think your explanations are very interesting and very insightful. I like that. I think we will in a later video we'll look into one or the other aspect of what you discussed, because they are so fundamental to a few angles or sometimes inflection points. So I'm really looking forward to that already. I think to finish this introduction, and you already shared a bit, I still would ask, you know, what kind of advice would you give to your peers, people of the same generation in some sense, but may not have had your width of experience. And also I will ask you later, you know, when you take someone who is just entering security or thinking about entering security, what advice you would give, because security has become a lot more complex than it was when we started. But starting with the first one, what advice would you give your peers?
I mean, I think it's time for us to take a step back and rethink how we're approaching security in general. I think we've been trying really hard to do it in a certain way. I don't think it's been successful. I think it's been extremely challenging. And I think the result is that we're still in a position where leadership teams don't know what we do. They don't understand the value that we can bring, and we're always seen as overhead. And I think that we have a lot more to offer to businesses than that. Mm-hmm. And I think that we as leaders know that. We just haven't been able to communicate it. And anytime we're presenting on like the number of vulnerabilities in our environment, we're doing ourselves a disservice and we're talking about the wrong things. And so my advice to my peers would be that we need to start talking about the bigger picture of how security helps to drive a business. I think there's always a story to be told there. I just don't think we've been telling it very well, and we've been too reactionary. So we have to have that eye towards the horizon. So that'd be my statement to my peers with challenge. The gauntlet that I want to throw down is, I don't want to be talking about vulnerabilities in 5 years. Like, this shouldn't even be a thing that we talk about.
I totally agree. So now take the younger generation. As you know, we suffer from having a big difference between offer and demand in the cybersecurity area. So, you know, young people may see a very much more complex construct these days, and so many directions and so many areas he could be focusing on. I don't really know, should I choose a specific one and go very deep? Should I do more wider? Should I first try to understand also the business things, not just the technical security things? Should I know, or should I also study the IT side? So there are so many more important choices to make than when we started, because we grow with the evolution of cybersecurity. So what advice would you give them?
So I think my advice is, first, respect the fact that it's a broad field. Also respect the fact that everybody's different. And so some may want to dig deep in a very specific area, and that's great. And some may want to be broader and have a broader understanding of things. But one of the things that I do with all of my teams, and actually I'm just kicking this off right now with my team at Oscar Health, is using a tool called Clifton Strengths to really help understand what are the things that energize you. What are the general, you know, themes and strengths that someone has that actually give you energy, and then try to figure out the domains where that can best be put to use. Are you more of an engineering mindset? Are you more of an influencer? Are you, you know, strategic? Are you more someone who likes to get things done? Are you more operational? Are you someone who wants to do things that are that have a more defined construct around them? And I think that's the beauty of security, is that it is so broad that there is literally something for everyone. It's just a matter of trying to understand that there's not just one job. So it's like everybody saying, I want to be a red teamer. Don't go be a red teamer. That's for a very specific type of person. And you may not find joy there. And don't think it's the sexiest thing in the world, because it probably isn't.
Thank you. I think we'll should probably put the reference about the StrengthsFinder in the show notes. So for anybody who would like to dig a bit deeper himself, especially early on in the career, sometimes it's something we discover later. But the earlier you get a self-understanding on that area, it's great. And I think that finishes this video. And I think we already have planned something about the financial aspects, or the budgeting aspect. You mentioned them several times in this video. So that should come out any day soon. So also thank you very much for joining that, or, you know, inspiring us on this one. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, thank you so much on this launch day of our channel. To be with us and sharing your view of life and your evolving wisdom in the cybersecurity. So thank you so much, Nick.
Thank you for having me, Guy. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.